Thank you very much. Alba. Dawn, where the gray lifting off, fog rising, herons on the black mud exposed of the bay, blue-grays and greens, the steady shore, the knife blade, leaves of the eucalyptus dripping in fog, tick, tick, the air salt, dawn, 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 the idiots stutter, remarried, the mirror slips out, out, on the glazed mud, the vase-shaped birds make their harsh, unvarying cries. I am. Chalk smell, damp of clay in the dull gray, swelling under his hands, turning, opens to a vase. Dawn, the shelves full, the bisqued and the still damp squat, oh-mouthed, all wonder, veiled to be trimmed. Smell of clay. Dawn, dawn, favored a deep blue glaze called cobalt, fired all night at cone 6 or cone 10. I don't know the trade, the hell of the kiln intact in the dark, a brick removed, a window into hell, remarried, up all night for beauty you could use. I'm going to explain. Dawn, the deep blue burns away, the fog crawls off the edges, exposing the flesh color, the raw clay. The cries of the blue-gray herons float back across the bay. Smell of clay, dawn, silence, begin again. Water glasses always do that at readings. The next poem is called Blood Oranges. I was having love troubles, and I was thinking about Medea, and I was in France, where I was eating the blood oranges, the orange sanglante, they were called. Wonderful fruit. Blood oranges. I stood in the kitchen cutting them open for his pleasure. I was speaking to him calmly through the open door, pausing sometimes to lick the flat side of the knife. What colors, I said to him, knowing that he would remember the desert and how our haste to be out of danger measured itself against the slow staining of the sky. What fire opals, he murmured. He had promised me everything. What rubies, I answered, looking out where the barren landscape I had by heart flickered by. No one fooled me. I crushed love to my mouth, and the juice was briefly sweet. We left the pieces where they fell, and no one was following us. How can you be sure, he asked, when I split the first one. And then I showed him how the darkness seeps up through the skin. I have dreamed of the woman he loves now. She was beautiful, fleeing her father's house in terror, the white dress lifting around her its numberless tongues of bright orange and deep red. Also in France, I was buying the roses, they were very cheap, and hanging them up in order to dry them. And my grandmother, who I was very close to, had died rather recently, and these two, I don't know how to explain it. I'll just read the poem. It's called Drying Roses. One, they stiffened and darkened. You call this love? They hardened, their scent hardened, and what was the sweet cream blushing to warm cerise was seen as fat and blood, the flesh of a corpse, the skin of a corpse. Leathery, dark, and hard, they held as true the shape they shut upon, closed like a fist on what they were certain of. Why call it anything? It is the cramped and brittle reminder, not the memory, which lasts forever, well, practically. Two. They stiffened and darkened where they hung, like a sunset held too long in mind, mere sentiment. The evening sky, The rigid leaves of dust green mocked the gestures they had meant once still, holding up and out that empty embrace, although up was down, carpe diem sung, as usual, somewhere outside. Ah, see, these hungers feast upon themselves and sicken. The evening sky deepened into throttled fury, colors that had hinted once at gentlest reproach. Their heads hung down. They choked. 3. They stiffened and darkened. One wants to save from the wreckage what one can. One hauls the dead up on one's island and one talks to them. One talks to them. They tan and blister. There comes a day when one no longer knows to what it is one talks, to what it was that one was talking to. Here love begins. The darkened, stiff waves rustle on the painted shore, releasing cloying scents. Here talking ends. The dead assume the shapes they always had. These cupped and burning, leaning close as if to hear, hear this whisper as of ash on ash. 4. They stiffened and darkened. Not like the thing one has in mind, but how one has it, implication desiccated on the stem to saved savoir. Yes, well, one admits the sexual. Irritated by the tenacious grasp they imitate, they take on satiated shades, colors, both sick and dead. The doctor takes his earned bouquets and yet remains on stage, confused by and afraid of those dark layers of deep velvet which would wrap him should he wander towards the wings. He makes of menace a quite limited desire, not mine. The eye can eat forever of this dry crust, these ruins in a desert. The sexual will creep forth from the center where it weaves its shining, sticky web and waits. Who catches something there is caught. We take the hint. Impossible to shake it off. 5. Say they stiffened and darkened then and leave it there. Unless it is that you still want the allegorical, the image as an illuminated text whose text has bowed and walked away, the fair exchange, say love. They became about a certain shape convinced and shrunk. Sheer chance became the fate that light and air have sealed. What they shut upon so firmly slipped away. The certainty itself remains. The petals were a nest of bloody thorns that pricked that light and air and ached themselves. Not any longer the imagination's lion of vermilion jaws. This beast becomes the will's. Its teeth are rusted shut and stained. They could be trusted now to break. I wrote the next poem when I began to realize that I had a sense of myself as a sense of my sort of essential self as what happens with when you got a radio and an old VW and you're driving through the mountains. The self. Faceless and voiceless, busy constructing. Wretched in the mirror, the body you twisted to hide in a harder and more precise light, the wills, nothing inside. To put across in. Vision at halt, that landscape of black wire. I can't pretend any longer. This slips out from under. Music, this music, disjunct and sorry. Meant to tell you, but the meaning, stage, whispers. The white precipitate bloom. A note from the seemingly under. We were not white and fragile blank light of this. In early spring, fading, another storm blurs. Each like saves at the edges, fingers, teeth. I was a note from the seemingly calm, which would soon be over. For a while it seemed like whenever I moved in college, the room I moved into would always be pink and I'd have to paint it white, which is what I paint rooms. and it began, there became this hallucinatory quality of no matter how much I painted, they were still pink. Fine art paints the back bedroom. All day, while the day darkened, she went on painting the room white. It would be women holding a man to a promise. It wouldn't matter whose. The cicadas went on drilling holes in the air, eye holes, for the end, where the women desert him and the trees move. She went on painting the room, the first coat, the flesh tone pink bleeding through. I am painting the death of Camille. I see it as the white wormhole crossing out of the roller moving against the pink walls. He sat in the other room, bent over the blank paper, the cicadas making that shrill metallic whine like a fishing line going out, the reel spinning, the wet slap of the brush on the other side of the wall. He imagined hauling it in, gutting it, the white flesh still faintly pink and the taste almost too delicate. He imagined it going on into that droning, tearing its mouth apart or breaking the line somewhere near dawn. There is no woman the possession of whom is worth the truths she reveals by making us suffer. And when it got too dark to tell, she turned on the light and went on, painting it over now, white on white. Home. One. I lay down a long time ago, not expecting to get up ever. Now I think I should learn to be quiet. I should read the news. I should watch the news. Here's a tree. How does a tree feel? Here's a list. Your life lasts as long as it does. Then don't interrupt them. Look, listen, learn to be quieter. And she sat quietly. We couldn't speak around her, exaggeratedly mouthing the words, pressing the pen down hard. Two. I should read the news. I should watch the news. Get out of myself more. Take long walks. Here's a tree. How does a knife feel? Get out more. Here's a list. Your life lasts as long as it does. Eat something, maybe. Try the jammed window. Turn off each light as you leave the room behind you. Leave your face in the mirror alone. Break the window into the bathtub. The water, it's still warm. Yes, it's fine. Break a cardinal into the bathtub. Yes, no, that's your hand. That's the voice of a woman sobbing. Where you cut it on glass. Where you cut it washing the dishes. There was a knife in the sink. There was something broken. The splash of glass, your face in fragments. Now you shiver. Break the tree. A cardinal. Red on the dull green. Now it's raining. How does your hand feel? Listen. Quieter. Don't come home drunk like that anymore. Three. It is not a splash of blood, it is a cardinal in the tree, whose shadow shatters but does not break the house, between whose dullest leaves it is the end of summer, the fragments of an argument my married neighbors slip past, lift, flicker. It is not that this has happened before or the urgency of my listening. I was a child then. It is a bird flying. It is a green carpet. It is a glass breaking and wine spreading to stain with a version of wings, something green. And a woman spreading her hands to cover the stain. I'm usually full of chatter. I have to entreat you to believe that, since I have none tonight. The next poem I'm going to read is a prose poem called You. I tried to tell you this story in a bar and you said, let's not talk like that. We always talk like that because it's comfortable, you know. And so we stood awkwardly watching others' mouths in the dark and the warmth of the bar. These are the three stories I know about knives. They are not in the order I heard them, but the order in which they arranged themselves over the years in my mind. Because I won the logging company scholarship, I had to go in a tie to a horrible lunch with the president and the vice president of the company, etc., and my mother and the five other winners and their fathers. My father had died that year, and then wearing an honorary hard hat on a tour. The high point of the tour was this. They took us to the edge of a deep valley that had been clear-cut, all but one huge old tree, they said, virgin, taller than the hill on which we stood. The high point of the tour was this. They cut it down. In the light at the edge of the dance floor, or lack of it, all the faces looked smoothed out, not with youth, but polished somehow, or worn away. There was that sea sound of music and laughter, and when I leaned against you to speak, I forgot what I wanted to say. That summer, I tried to get a job selling knives for a cutlery company, door to door. I went to a training session, and the guy tried to show me how it was done. He was really enthusiastic. He thought they were great knives. It was pretty high pressure. He said to me, "We mostly sell to ladies, 18 to 24, that's who we aim for." He asked me, "What does every young woman want more than anything else in the world?" I said, "I don't know, a job?" He said, "No, a husband," brandishing those knives. Men kept coming up to you in the bar and trying to touch you. They would trip over your feet to touch your thigh just once in apology, each time with the same earnest look. E ciascuna ci riguardava come sol da sera guardare un altro sotto nuova luna. And they looked at each other as men look at each other under a new moon. I had a job working the cash register for this old blind Jewish butcher in Brooklyn. He was an old blind Jewish butcher who loved his trade as much as he hated blacks, but had had to hire a black assistant because this kid was the only one he could find who loved the work like he did and was as good. They each had their own way of going about it. The blind man working by feel, the knife following his hand in a graceful motion like a conductor holding the horns down very soft. And the black kid snapping his fingers and flicking the meat open there and there to the soul music fuzzing out of the tiny radio he managed to never set down. The old man would run his hands over every cut at first, right after, saying half angrily, "Okay, it's good, it's okay." Use had worn a low impression in the hardwood block and worn the knives away to shadows, carved them away. You said, "It's always other people's stories. You don't have any stories of your own." And then I said, "No, I don't have any stories of my own." The motions. There's a man on TV and he's walking around and smiling. He's waving his arms and humming a tune he just watched a woman dancing around to, and he's in love. And this is what being in love looks like. This is what it sounds like. And if in the middle of making love to you I might suddenly stop imagining what it would be like making love to you, I might suddenly stop and say, "This is real, isn't it?" And get up and put the needle back down at the start of the Sixth Symphony, thinking, "I ought to oil the springs of this bed." The man on TV is ripping off his coat. He's rolling up his sleeves. He's grabbing an oil pastel, and he's drawing her quickly and laughing, saying, "You are still with me." And this is what being in love looks like. Exactly. You say, "Up this close, you have three eyes." "But how do I look?" You say, "Wonderful, sort of." And that swelling music from the other room says that something's going wrong. And when I come back, the man on TV is standing on a balcony watching her run away down a narrow, dark, rain-washed street. Because if this is what it's really like, but this can't be what it's really like, I can't help thinking there ought to be some way to show you. We know it's she, though it's only the swirl of a black cloak. I can feel my fingers on the cold wrought iron railing, something gritty, rust or soot coming off on my hands. I'm pulling my jeans back on, sort of carefully. And you say, "Wait, are those mine?" And the French horns are too precise to be hunting anything. And if you say it, the opposite will be true. And I say, "He hates me." And the camera behind him shows us him standing there looking after her after she's gone. There's the sound of footsteps diminishing. There's the empty street. And then there's that music again. And then the commercial comes on for the rowing machine. And I want to know how I'm going to tell you I love you so that I know that I love you. And I want to know if this is what being in love feels like, clutching the railing hard so it cuts into the palm of my hand. It sure looks stupid. There isn't a boat and there isn't any river, just somebody making the motions on the living room floor. I had a friend who was big on drying her clothes, hanging from a line with the natural scent of the wind in them, etc. This poem was to answer the poem that she wrote about that. It's called The Lease. I dry my clothes in a dryer. Fall comes, then winter, then spring. I watch the spiders doing and undoing their elaborate theories about what it means to be cornered and to wait to corner something smaller than yourself. Dinner. All this happens a long way away from the place I told you about before. The ugly young man in the laundromat riffs his jacket zipper, stands up in front of the MTV and says, "I'm a drummer, annoyed by the way we girls are dying over Mick Jagger's tongue." The clothes smell of nothing when I bring them home. Why should I want them to take up the wind's imitations, cut grass, burning leaves, the scent of the river, or see them on a line I put up myself, like pieces of myself, hacked up but struggling furiously, tonguing the air and maybe pulling it down? In the dryer they go up, and they fall back down on each other with a violent complacency, like slam dancers. After spring, summer, hot and damp. When my tennis shoes kick their way out before it's over, I stuff them back in, feed it another quarter. When you say whoops, I know exactly what you mean. With a great deal of trepidation, I approach the thing that Jim told you about. The thing. And I am going to read part of the book-length poem that I've been working on since before I got here, since I got here, after I leave here. In short, forever. But not really. It's called The Tales of Horror. I call it a postmodern gothic. It uses the conventions of the gothic to play with a lot of ideas, narrative, sexual politics, authority, who has it, etc. There are no real characters. I don't believe in character. What there are voices bleeding into and out of each other. There are some figures. There's a figure which is the parlor maid, which is a young woman to whom something terrible seems to have happened. And maybe she could tell us about it, but she can't tell us about it because she's too scared, and so she can't coherently tell us about it. The other figure is the male authority figure, who's the doctor, inspector, professor, and he is going to tell us the story, but he's so busy telling us what kind of story it is that he can never tell the story. In between that, there's a married couple, and then there are these voices, some of them outrightly plagiarized from a wonderful book called Great Tales of Terror and the Supernatural. It has an epigraph, which is from Baudelaire, a poem called La Muse Malade, the sick muse, or mad muse, really. I'm going to read it in French and then translate it. I expect John Misner to correct me. Ma pauvre muse, hélas, qu'as-tu donc ce matin? Tes yeux creux sont peuples de visions nocturnes, et je vois tout s'atelier sur ton teint, la folie, l'horreur, froid et taciturne. My poor muse, alas, what's with you this morning? Your narrow eyes are full of nocturnal visions, and I see turn by turn display themselves in your feature, madness and horror, cold and taciturn. The Tales of Horror. I entered the house carefully, but was dismayed to find that nevertheless, the ancient house, the abandoned house, the house that had been like that forever. Despite my caution in entering, in spite of the considerations I had so thoroughly entertained, the doubts I had so prominently displayed, etc., I found that despite my trepidations, in spite of the warnings I had received, but they were anonymous, remember, which I had lent an ear to which I had listened so judiciously, which I had read and then burnt as the notes instructed, but had believed. Although this had been, I repeat, I cannot make clear enough, no sudden decision. I did nothing in those days by fits and starts, but the result of painstaking, and even, I do not think I would be far off in stating exhaustive deliberations, and the weighing of all the possible consequences, good and bad, on both sides, the fruits of my past experiments, the rather extensive, if I may say so, knowledge my endless researches had finally vouchsafed me, in spite of which the truth of the matter seemed to be that there was a point at which one could no longer say that one was entering, but that one was now in the position of having entered. Although it was not certain when or if this change had occurred, nor would it be possible, I quickly became aware to disentangle this having entered from what would become a leaving. Dark shape in its bed of rank weeds, its entrance gaping, but not, I was wrong, like that, forever, a shred of white lace at a broken window insisted on history. She touches me and takes her hand away abruptly. It's so clear that there's no one there. But it's always been like that. Nervous laughter. The picture of a headless man falling headlong hangs at the head of the stairs. Why, I must have been dreaming. All this in the tone of one who desires to convince himself or herself. The maroon silk smoking jacket, the yawn, the fists rubbed into the eyes. Sensuous detail is wonderful, wonderful, but when the sheets twist themselves up into that slug-like form in the sticky moonlight, becoming a lady who goes for the throat, I check out of this hotel, this apartment in a crumbling villa, mansion that no one, etc. I won't stay another minute, I tell you. Fireworks. And if the marriage breaks up, it's the fault of the house. The body goes out on a stretcher. I tell you, it's the same woman after all this time. There's a shocked gasp, perhaps? Could you give us a, yes, thought that was your tongue, no need to worry about that any longer. I say, old chap, didn't it seem to you for an instant, did it, that choir of summer insects was doing Verdi? On the contrary. You have to wonder why he didn't just donate the goddamn, whoops, literally, thing to a museum. He put his head in his hands. May I make a suggestion? We shall have to arm ourselves carefully for this deed. And in fact, he would not have lived if we hadn't moved him here. The thing, with a piercing shriek of unearthly laughter, fled away. Why, it's been to let forever. You can tell that a beautiful but evil woman once lived here. Well, the house was thick with terror. I say, what is this goop on the stairs? Let's have another, shall we? I don't think I could bear to be left alone just yet. I don't think I can stay here. These candles have a habit of going out. Ah, yes, here's that little something I've been telling you about. There, did you see that? And it's headed in our direction. Well, I could have sworn they, no, but I'd better not have another. Preposterous, that those birds and insects in the tall grasses and green-leaved trees at the beginning of summer were producing a most sophisticated tune. Shaking his head as if to clear it, gentle, slightly amused laughter. In fact, I think I'll just turn in. Things are bound to look better in the morning. I believe you can shed a little light on this, Professor. Nothing simpler, the marks of teeth at the throat. But humming to himself as he went back upstairs, have you seen it? No, but I felt something. I distinctly felt some, as it were, breath of, yes, exactly, now you know I'm not mad. I was just so grateful to find lodgings I could finally afford. As though her hand had frozen at the touch of my shoulder, she quickly took it, stiffened as though around an invisible away. Voices, voices out of the walls and the ceilings and floors, and then nothing stays where you put it. Why, I wouldn't I live better, sir, for £100. No Bill, nor I either. This said kindly, condescendingly, tip him. This hissed out from, no doubt, the collective unconscious. It had an unpromising aspect, but my funds were low, and I wasn't, I told myself, lifting my head, one to be easily frightened. Just put those boxes down anywhere, and your name, burning eyes, eyes like, ah, yes, my name. I checked the mirror quickly, expecting, I'll admit it, to find only one of us there. The curtain swayed to and fro with a ghastly, drunken motion, although there wasn't even a breath of. He pressed one hand to his eyes, and I saw how haggard and pale he had recently become. I don't expect you to believe me, but where could I have heard this music, which has been out of fashion for ages? How had it come to lodge itself so firmly in my mind? And if I didn't open that window, then who? I began to see that I was not to get answers, but only a lot more questions. The parlor maid was incoherent with fear. Stop this gabble and tell me what it is you've seen. I can't describe it, but I felt, with great clarity. We tried each of the doors in turn. This house has been lived in, he said, speaking in a low tone, but with great intensity, by an extremely beautiful but utterly evil woman. Yes, yes, I feel that too. This week, workmen are taking the thing apart, stone by stone. Oh, this? Just a little something I found in the ruins. Don't bring it into the house. It's too late, we said, clutching each other, and indeed it was too late. Tell me everything you can recall about your mother, Mr. They call me mad now and say that I, but it won't bear thinking of. And yet I must think of it, coolly, and with the utmost logic, in order to convince you that I am not insane. No, no, it's impossible, and quite silly, but I'd swear to you that as I stood just now at the head of the stairs. Then you saw it? She breathlessly interrupted. No, but I had the clearest sensation. But that proves you're a blank, too. And yes, I had to admit to myself, as I trudged upstairs with my small candle, that the tainted blood of that family, I felt an absolute frisson of despair, was running in my veins as well. We must stay awake all night and watch out for it. Did you feel that? Yes. Why, it's as though it knew we were here. I hadn't the heart to tell her. There are things, I said gently, which you must know. I couldn't hope, he said, dropping his head into his hands, you would believe me. Then it must, I answered, in a voice almost as firm as his, be destroyed. Begin at the beginning and tell me everything you know about the unspeakable rites that were once practiced here. How well, he asked me, and I felt that he dragged the question out of himself reluctantly. How well did you really know Mrs. Blank? My mother, I gasped, in a tone of great disbelief. Yes, sit down, all of you. I'm going to tell you something that you will find very difficult to believe. And yet, every word of it, I swear to you. He gazed for a long moment into the fire. Yes, he said finally. I think it is finally right for you to know. It was a thin piece of slightly yellowed writing paper, closely covered with that spidery handwriting I knew so well. This will tell us, I feel certain, everything we... This will lay your doubts to rest forever. Oh, well, see what you think after reading this. As I read, the clouds of horror seemed to gather ever closer about me. With what, I wondered, had I become involved? There was a muted sound of sobbing, and yet there was no one in that room. I had hoped we would have an end to this mystery before now. It's that music. I can't get it out of my head. No, I answered in a choked voice. I'm afraid that I can't believe you, not about this. Yes, exactly the same woman. You can trust the evidence of your own senses, I should think, he said, a crafty look stealing over his face. Why, yes, but I don't think they're going to show me any such thing as you've described. Oh, I don't ask you any longer to believe me, but when empty glasses start flying around the room, she's just jealous, he murmured delightedly, murderously. Listen, this with a hand outflung to still us. Yes, there, I just heard it again. Yes, said the doctor, tipping his head back to let the sweet, burning fluid slide down his throat. I remember a similar tale, but a tale so horrible in all of its implications. He paused, looking out at us, as though to see whether we would, as an audience, do. And then turning again to the depths of his empty glass, he continued in a softer tone, as though he were speaking to himself, as though there had been no time in between. I remember everything. And then looking up, his voice more insistent, everything. At last we got it out of her. At last she murmured a few words between fits of hysterical weeping. At last she was able to get out a few broken sentences. Oh, well, he said, if that's all it was. It was on a night just such as this one. All at once the rotten wood gave way beneath me, and I was falling, falling, the echo of that inhuman laughter ringing in my ears, as though there were no time in between. The room I woke up in closely resembled, and yet something was subtly changed, and not for the better, needless to say. I think you must have been, she whispered, terribly alone for a long, long time. All at once I found myself falling, falling into a blackness so complete it was as though the walls and floors. Hit her if you have to, he said dryly. We have got to know what it is she thinks she's seen. So alone, she went on, in a voice so intimate I wasn't sure it wasn't coming from within me. You were sick with it. You felt it eating you up from inside. You thought you were dying. Abruptly she took her hand away. He wrote me a letter. These candles have a habit of going out at the oddest times. Sobbing with relief, then you believe me? He stood up in the street, watching the lights in the house go out one by one, his collar up and his eyes masked by the street lamp shadow. There is something, he whispered into the fog, that I think you must know. A love story? Someone in the back row gasped in disbelief. Yes, yes, he said to himself. I think that is what you would have to call it. Then what you are saying, I murmured at last, is that none of us can be trusted. He looked slightly annoyed. I was coming to that. These are not, he said shrilly, empty assertions. These are facts based on experiments. Yes, she said, in a low tone and as if unwillingly. It is true that I have had some luck in causing what you might call the essence to reappear, but then we must all, he repeated, be perfectly silent. Silent. I deciphered the mad scrawl and the fragment of yellowing parchment with some difficulty and a growing sense of dis-ease. Blankness. I am afraid it may indeed be a love story, but these words, he said, looking up from the page, mean nothing to me. I'm going to read you part of section two, which is called Things Look Better in the Morning. The sense of having been mistaken in all of my, well, what would you call them? Fancies, I think, is the word that springs to mind, came to me strongly as I sipped my coffee where the first pale rays of sunlight reached in through the narrow windows. The place just needs a few improvements, that's all. Sleep well, darling? Yes. Not bothered by any little noises, were you? What? Oh, not at all. And you? Don't be silly. The parlor maid, quiet and sensible, although mercifully, I suspected, unable to remember anything, shakily dished out the brains into each of our plates. I don't want to see you talking to the police later, my husband said. If you remember anything at all, come to me. She nodded weakly. Dear, I said, when the door had closed behind her, you'll only frighten her more. Maybe frighten some sense into her, he replied, but with what I could tell was only an assumed gruffness as he retreated behind the paper. I recall, though it seems a million years ago, the light-hearted ease with which I went about my little chores that day. Why, I might even have been singing to myself again after so long. But it all seemed so simple on that bright morning. A little paint, some flowers, a scattering of vividly colored silk cushions to pick out the harmonies, and we'll have to get in a piano. Even my darling Blank no longer accused it of being a mad plan. In fact, he expressed an interest, for the first time, in the history of the old pile, and when I found him poking, with a speculative look in his eyes, at the foundations with the tip of his umbrella, I considered it an excellent sign. You won't? I sung out a bit anxiously, for the parlor maid's pale, questioning face had appeared at one of the dormer windows in what we thought of as the empty wing. Track any of that indoors, will you? No, he called back, clearly replying to some other question. No, I think I'll be staying outside. He was always like that, amazingly sensitive. Is it still feminine intuition, he used to ask, when it's something I have? It is an experience, the doctor had had to explain to me, from which he may never recover. I saw it all so clearly now, and I was able, yes, to pity him. But who would have guessed on that lovely morning that either of us might soon be an object of pity? We must, I trilled, plant something there, indeed. It is only in recollection that I can see how we were menaced even then by unseen forces, forces which would soon, that is to say, which would all too soon... These moments of relative peace seem all that much more something in comparison. A dark substance oozed up from the holes he had made. And yet it is in looking back as though I already knew, or perhaps I should say already suspected, for surely I would not have known to grasp so desperately at an attempt to treasure those fleeting instants as I did without, to all but crush in this mad desire to keep unless somewhere. Yes. It is all too true, he said sadly, wiping off the point of his umbrella. One must have a profound sense of death in order to properly live. All of us, as we left the firelit room, were forced to confess that we had never heard anything so patently absurd. Thank you.
Fishbowl of the spot. Thank you. Okay, she's looking at you.
You're looking at your test.